So.
Okay, good morning, Professor Leibovitz. Thank you very much for joining us. As we discussed ahead of this interview, the theme of the discussion is the formulation and development of replica symmetry breaking ideas from roughly 1975 to 1995. We've read already some of the context of your own work in oral interviews that you've done in the past. So I thought we would jump right into the meat of the matter, if you don't mind. Okay. And the first one is, how did you first hear about spin glasses and replica symmetry breaking? And in particular, did you follow the early developments from the Edwards Anderson and S.K. Mal papers to the Parisi scheme in the late 70s?
I guess the answer is no, I did not follow in general those things at all. And where I first heard about it, I believe it was I heard Parisi give a talk in Paris, or rather in Bir-sur-Yvette. I was visiting the SOS. I thought it was earlier. Well, no, maybe. I guess I was there from 76 to 77. I spent a sabbatical at the SOS that year. And I guess it must have been during that time that Parisi talk. The only thing I remember, actually, is vaguely, is about taking a limit of dimension going to zero and finding that rather strange. But I did not really follow up at that time. I don't think I was doing different things. I forget now what, but not definitely not spin glasses. I guess I heard of the Edwards Sherrington thing, but just took it as general information rather than something very specific at that time. I think the time sort of more seriously, and I can't remember the year, David Ruel was visiting Rutgers and gave a course on his ideas about cascades of spin things. And at some point ended up Michael Eisenman, David Ruel, and myself writing a joint paper proving some things about the Edward Anderson model at high temperature. I don't remember what year that was, but I, of course you can look up the date of the paper.
1987 is the paper.
Was it 1987? So there was, that's already, what was the period you were saying you were particularly concentrating on?
That falls within it, yes. So we've heard about this series of lectures that David Ruel was giving. Was this at your invitation? Can you tell us a bit more about the content?
Well, I think we I had a general invitation to David Ruel to visit Rutgers. And for some time he was coming every year or every second year, I can't remember, or he would come and spend several months at Rutgers. Yeah, it was at my invitation. And he would generally give some course, and this was one of the courses he gave.
Okay, so you didn't request a course about this topic. This is, you volunteered this idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really up to him what he wanted to talk about. And I guess this is the topic he was interested in at that time. So I remember that it was very complicated. His construction and his talk was a very complicated thing, and I'm not sure I understood, well, certainly not all of it. I don't remember what fraction of it I did understand. But now that you mentioned it, I should have gone back. I don't even remember exactly what we proved or what was the technique we used for proving it. I haven't look back. I was just before talking to you, I was looking at my papers, I think about randomness, but I was still in the 1960s. I had a paper with Bob Griffiths about the kind of thing where not all sides of the lattice are occupied by spins with ferromagnetic interaction. And I think what we proved there is that if the concentration of spins is sufficiently high, you will get kind of phase transitions that you get in the regularizing model, where all sides are occupied. And then maybe also some additional properties, how the free energy depends on the concentration and things like that. But I didn't look back at the paper with Eisenman and Ruel, so I don't remember. You probably may have looked at it more recently.
So do you recall why you didn't pursue these ideas further after this one paper?
Well, presumably mostly because I didn't have any good ideas about it. There were some other things to do. I think there was one paper, I remember, which was sort of aborted in some sense. It was a joint paper, what's the name? French probabilist I'm trying to remember now, and somebody else, maybe Jean-Baptiste Jacomin, where we thought we had some interesting results about spin glasses, but the referee caught a mistake. Basically, we made some assumption about certain inequalities being true. We just somehow assumed that they were, and in the end, we could not actually prove that they were true. So I think we finally wrote a short paper with some results. But again, I have not really a good memory at the moment. I mean, that was a much later period. I would have to look back at my publication list to remember what that was about.
We can do that at a later stage.
It's just, sorry, I was just busy these last few days. And I did not get a chance to go back and look really what I did. Anyway,
did you nonetheless stay abreast or keep abreast of the later developments in spin glass models and their interdisciplinary applications? Let's say to neural networks.
Only peripherally. I mean, of course, I was. During that period, I guess I was in touch with Derrida and heard about his ideas, but just heard about them. I somehow, I'm not sure. I somehow didn't take it, didn't absorb it. I mean, there were many different things to work on, and this did not catch my attention directly. I think it wasn't, I mean, getting back again to some properties or inequalities for such system, what's the name, did some work maybe 10 years ago, with Pierluigi Contucci, that was much more recent. I remember, I mean, I sort of never really got into the idea of letting the dimension go to zero or negative I remember, I think Oliver Penrose was visiting, I think Stanford, and he was giving a course in statistical mechanics. And he was saying that the students, so it's going to negative dimension, was really, really far out from the things that maybe we have gone sort of off the rail in terms of that.
Sorry, as part of running your famous conference series at Rutgers, you've had the chance to enhance the visibility of various subfields of statistical mechanics over the years, and at the same time to acquire a very deep knowledge of the community. In the recent years, you've highlighted the work of scientists who've worked pretty extensively on spin glasses, such as Pasteur, Hopfield, Parisi, Eisenman, Fisher, Hughes. What was your impression of these conferences, and how do you think that the spin glass problem fits in the broad statistical mechanics field, say, today?
Very good question, but I don't think I have a ready answer. I still feel mostly like an outsider to that field. Of course, at the conferences and in the literature and other things, I'm aware in a general way, and of course was aware kind of the breakthrough with the work of Toninelli and Francesco Guerra about proving some of the, I think, rigorously, and of the mathematician also, the French mathematician.
Talleyrand, yes.
Yeah, Talleyrand, this is true. But somehow never got into really the nitty gritty of it. And in fact, I do not know what the current status is. I'm sure you know much better. I guess Francesco is much more into that think over there. Actually, Francesco, how did you get involved in this project?
In this project of history of science?
Yeah.
Oh, because we have been collaborating with Patrick for quite a long time on problems related to glass physics. And so when he proposed me to help with this project, I thought it was a good idea. I mean, we would like to understand a little bit better how the ideas that are behind the replica symmetry breaking approach to glasses and so on originated in the first place.
So yeah,
that was my motivation.
I see. Yeah, as I say, I was not really, as far ever, part of that community in any direct way. I mean,
But I think it's useful for us to have also the view of an outsider. I mean, you still have. I mean, you have a very complete view of the statistical mechanics community. So I think you can. I mean, it's very helpful to.
Yeah. I'm very willing to let him tell you of my ignorance, but that's about actually mostly what I can say. I mean, I think that field was pretty much a specialty. It didn't have so much overlap with some of the other parts going on in statistical mechanics. The connection with real glasses, things like that, I think came a bit later, if I remember correctly. And by that time, I just was not involved. I mean, I remember listening to talks, but that was much later. Who was it? I mean, people like some mathematicians who were doing that, and then I guess sort of peripherally maybe related through random matrices which came in over there, but again my main interest there and are in other areas of statistical mechanics, not in this one.
Do you nevertheless have any insight to offer about the difference between the US and the European statmec communities with respect to the replica symmetry breaking ideas and spin glasses?
I guess I mostly would sort of it as a European thing with Giorgio Parisi, Marc Bazar, Bernard Derrida, and people like that. Obviously, so they're working in the United States. I mean, like Michael Eisenman, as you mentioned. Who were the other names you mentioned from the United States besides Eisenman?
Fisher, Hughes, David Hughes.
Oh, yeah. Daniel Fisher, David yes. Hughes. Oh, yeah. I mean, I do remember the controversy, particularly between Fisher and Hughes on one side and Parisi on the other side. Yeah, I guess. And Chuck Newman, I guess, was also, and Daniel Stein, they were involved a little bit in that. But again, I mean.
So maybe as an outsider, what was your impression of that controversy? Because, I mean, we are trying to reconstruct because we were not there at the time. I mean, for people outside the community, was it clear, I mean, what was the object of the controversy and what was the interest of the discussion and so on? Or did it look like, a personal discussion between a few specialists that, I don't know?
I think that's more like it. I guess if I remember correctly, the question was whether systems with short-range interactions will have the same type of behavior, like the Sherrington Edwards model. Actually, has that controversy ever been resolved? Still not, I see.
Yeah, not, I mean, really, no.
Yeah, I see David Hughes very frequently, just had lunch with him yesterday, but I don't think we have talked about that for, I don't remember talking about it, but I remember in the old time, I think about questions sort of personalities. I think it was when Giorgio became a foreign member of the National Academy of Sciences. I remember worrying about him having some encounters with Michael Fisher, Daniel's father, worry whether they might have some personal animosities. I don't think there was ever any real problem, but I can't remember. I mean, usually at these National Academy meetings or what, Michael Fisher would host some party. He lived in Maryland, close to Washington, D.C. And I can't remember now whether Giorgio was invited or not, or whether we, but I remember sort of worrying about it at some point. So I would say a sort of a general outsider understanding about the question, namely, I guess, how many minima were there in the landscape, I guess, of the energy, which was the argument about. And I remember particularly for some reason Chuck Newman, Daniel Stein writing some papers, I guess trying to prove that Fisher and Hughes were right. I remember that, but I don't remember anymore, and certainly was not involved in any personal way about it.
As a final question, is there anything that we may have missed that you would like to tell us about this epoch, this era?
Not that I know at this time, but let me say, if I think of something, I'll write to you or what I said. Okay, and I will send you, what am I supposed to do, sign it or what, to send you that? I mean, how do I...
So thank you.